Now, if you're anything like me, you have found that very few people actually know who you are. I mean, down deep inside, the real you. You're lucky if you even have a deep connection with a spouse or a close friend. How can you? Are you truly in touch with yourself? Few of us are taught to be mindful of our feelings. Really mindful. Probably our parents held back many of their feelings. I wonder, could they actually be authentic with each other? The evasion of speaking to authentic feeling is our conundrum in our day and time. Being open to feeling seldom happens. I mean, feeling that is underneath our strong emotions. Most of us just don't navigate deeply. Instead, we distract ourselves with society's noise, the consumerism and commercials, the cell phones and texts and emails, the news and politics, for goodness sakes, all playing havoc with our emotions, you know, especially during this time with the presidential election and all. These battle for our attention, and we keep our brains busy doing. Who among us takes the quiet time to touch into the longings of our heart? That's the conundrum. And there are two sides to this. The side of sharing ourselves, of speaking from our deep, often hidden feelings, our shame, our suffering, our sadness, for example. And the other side, receiving spoken feelings, the very act of listening. Feelings need to be heard, and heard deeply, caringly, for heart-to-heart communication to occur. In the busyness of our lives, we give little value to either side, speaking from our deep feeling or hearing the deep feelings of others. We're just not there in this world of ours. We've not given it a priority of living from deep within. Only in recent years have I given this a priority in my life. Now I regularly attend a group that listens to relate with compassionate communication. Are there some here maybe that are familiar with the practice called nonviolent communication? Anybody? We got about four. Yeah. Speaking from feeling and speaking about feeling needs to take place. It needs to be a conscious practice of ours, speaking from our depths and hearing each other from their depths. And I call that sacred mutuality. And it so seldom happens. Our usual conversations tell the tale at home, at the office, in the neighborhood, at church, with a spouse, with a child, with an elder, with our supervisor. Our habits are just poor. Here's an example of what could occur in the church foyer or downstairs, you know, in the fellowship hall. Man, I just saw the movie, The Railway Man. It moved me to tears. That movie was about a World War II prisoner of war. It touched my heart. You know what it brought it up for me? Prisoners, of course. That reminds me of the movie The Bridge Over the River Kwai. You know, the one that starred Alec Guinness? That was the same railroad that... Now, what just happened in that conversation? Anybody, what happened? What'd you say? Brushed aside. Hijacked? Hijacked. Those feelings were, yeah, just hijacked by the listener. He didn't really deeply listen, did he? Yes, the feelings got bypassed. We don't want to touch that realm for some reason. That man's grief, his sadness, his feelings for what the prisoner endured. The listening stopped and the ego jumped in, or even one-upsmanship jumped in, and the man who interrupted did two things. He shifted the exchange to himself. And he shifted away from feelings. He chose something that he knows, something that he's comfortable talking about. He moved the conversation to what I call the balcony of aboutness, totally in the head. I'll stand over here and talk about anything I want to. It seems so hard for us to communicate authentically with feeling, even to ourselves, let alone with someone else. It's even more difficult sustaining a deep, meaningful, heart-to-heart conversation. There are few people. We're lucky if we even have someone who we can speak with in that way from the depths of our hearts. So what's the result? I mean, what's that leave us with? We're not seen for who we are. We're not truly heard. People don't know us. Whatever within you that hurts deep down, your private pain, it is not heard, not felt, not known. Our struggles, our fears and pain, our losses and sadness, our deep doubts, all, well, our deep gladness even, does not have someone to receive that, to care, to listen. That means we are not seen for who we are. We're seen only for our personalities, our tasks, and our roles in society. That means we remain in a shallow set of relationships. That's how I see it. And for most of us, anyway, unless we do have a few precious people who feel with us, that can make such a difference. Just one person who accepts you for who you are, warts and all. Someone who hears your heart's longings and loves you as you are and who you are. That person is your soul companion. Our society lacks soul companions. Most of us feel that lack. And we can have the quality of companioning that I'm speaking of here. If we act on that craving, if we tap into that something that feels missing deep down. Do you keep your feelings unspoken and private? You can move beyond the distractions of television and your hobbies. You can receive companionship that awakens those gnawing needs into a caring conversation. And I know this because I now do it. You can, as feminist theologian Nell Morton spoke of so often, you can be heard into speech. The fullness of who you are, your struggles and doubts and fears, your gifts and strengths and successes, and your deep longings can be seen and heard and encouraged, sponsored, brought forth, if that is what you desire. That can happen. Companioning can offer that for you and for others. I have felt this longing and have acted on it. That need has been with me since my adolescence. First time I realized it was at the dinner table when I was 15. There was my dad, who frightened me with his quick anger. I was always on edge, thinking he's going to explode. My mother, who was often emotionally scattered, and my sister, a typical teen. You know, no one was listening at that dinner table. And I noticed as our dinner time habit and thought that, I noticed that, and I thought to myself, I want to be heard. I want to be seen for who I really am and for what I feel. That need has never left me. My needs are probably not much different from your needs. But it wasn't until my divorce, 38 years ago, that I actually did anything about it. Times of personal, emotional turmoil often give us that opportunity that will knock, you know, they'll knock on the head or someplace, finally saying, you've got to do something different, you know. I found different ways for being heard and for hearing others' deep needs. And that has become my passion, and I want to share it with others whose hearts ache, and to attend to that something that feels missing. And since leaving Settled Ministry, I left Settled Ministry in the year 2000. My ministry has focused largely on helping and healing the relational lives of our congregations. My calling then, 16 years ago now, was to bring that love that sustained our Universalist forebears back to the center of our congregational faith so we could live out of that. To make that love real in terms of hospitality and courtesy, where each person is offered unconditional positive regard. Love as empathy and compassion, where each member and child feels that what is stirring within them is welcomed in the conversation. Love as longings felt deeply, longings that yearn, that even ache, to come alive and find expression. And love as friendship, where shared interests find a common ground of mutuality. Of late, I have chosen to focus on fostering safe, trusting circles of relationship, and that ministry has led me to actually developing something that I call companioning circles. But today, I'm not addressing the circles, I'm addressing the ache that calls those circles into being. I have a story that I want to bring this to focus home to us of what can be if we value it enough. Companioning another's feelings is best illustrated with an example that grounds us in an actual human emotion. Any emotion can be chosen now. Demonstrate the healing effect of companioning. Anxiety can be mentioned. Grief, anger. I've decided to bring up the emotion of shame. Shame is possibly the most toxic emotion that one can carry around because it attacks our very sense of being. It may be the emotion that we all most fear, and yet we need shame, believe it or not, as well as fear, shame. Healthy shame, as Dr. Robert Augustus Masters says, healthy shame triggers our conscience, our innate immoral sense. Unhealthy shame triggers our inner critic, which easily masquerades as our conscience. You should not. But shame kept in the dark keeps us in the dark. What is so debilitating about shame? It is the painfully self-conscious sense of being exposed as defective. Brené Brown says, shame derives its power from being unspeakable. It keeps us quiet. That is, unless we cut it to its knees by naming it, by exposing it. To use her language, what we need to do, our need is a person or a place that will invite us to dare greatly and name that shame. That's what companioning can offer. It awakens our courage. And it's my guess that each of you have experienced shame sometime, at least in your childhood. But those early emotions have a tendency to stay with us somehow unless they're directly dealt with. My shame has much to do with my body, my stature, my size, my small features like my wrists and ankles. You know, when you're a teenager, you don't want to look weak. A man, a boy, needs to be manly and strong. And so that image was an image I could not live up to. It's taken me decades to deal with it. By golly, I've dealt with it. I've dealt with it. Yeah, and I want to share something with you all. Here's how you deal with it. This is, now, I'm going to generalize. I know that when a baby is born, some babies are not born beautiful and perfect. And I recognize that, and I'm not making fun. I'm saying most often, when we come into this world, we come in as like God's miracle, and we are pure and innocent, and we're beautiful. And that's the image I'm speaking from. A baby becomes a toddler, becomes 2 and 3 years old, and all of a sudden, things are just not quite going right for that little child. You know what it's like? Well, by the time you get like 9 or 10 years old, things are a lot tougher because you're struggling to be who you are. And by the time you're in your teens, you know darn well you're defective. Yeah, and all kinds of things are just getting in your way, and you have to build a crust over that. How am I going to defend myself to deal with life? And so you become quite skillful at it. Very skillful at navigating, even though you have these faults, these shadow things. Well, and so you, for many of us, it takes a divorce or maybe a midlife crisis or something, but it's sometime usually in the 40s that you might start looking at it and saying, I don't want to continue like this. And so you start doing some self-help work or go to a therapist or some other thing. And you might even get involved in spiritual growth work, you know, and really seriously engage in it. Well, then you find yourself actually being able to see that original true nature of who you are, but not without the scars. Those scars are still going to be there all your life, but they are not controlling your emotions, and that's the difference. You can then see who you truly, purely are through those scars. That's a little demo that... All right. Lift up my true nature, scars and all. So, how can you could just hold it on your chest, Jim? Just So, how can companioning or a circle of trusted companionings help us dare greatly? How can companioning serve as a supportive witness to our struggles with debilitating emotions? I want to share a story from my years as an interim minister, a story in which I will give no names, but will share the feelings and the setting. A troubled colleague was heard deeply by those she trusted. This was, of course, a confidential and a caring circle of friends. And the one colleague, a mature, experienced woman minister, chose a few of us as her confidants. But it was not an intentional support group. This happened rather spontaneously, and she felt the safety of the setting and the people. And we were present with her in a quiet and very much the ways that Dr. Wolfelt describes in this litany of companioning. We recited. None of us were there to fix or save or advise or set her straight. Just hearing her in the speech. And we were engaged in some personal sharing, all of us. But when she somewhat diffidently said a few words like, I don't know how to say this, but I've been carrying within me something that I am ashamed of. I have not mentioned it to my husband or anyone, but I'm not sure, and I'm not sure I can speak it even here, but somehow I just need to acknowledge that and get beyond this blocked feeling that just keeps tugging at my heart. Well, one of the fellas in the circle seemed to hear her pain and feel it immediately. even her, that feeling was so strong, it was stronger than apparently than the rest of us. And he held her fixed, a gaze at her. He said, go ahead, tell me more. Tell us more about what you're feeling. So he continued to look into her eyes, conveying to all of us also, just by that gesture, that relationship that he had with her, that he deeply cared. He had somehow entered into the depths of her feeling. And silence actually became a partner in our circle as his eyes and heart held her with caring presence and completely devoted to what she needed. And his presence invited her feelings up into her chest, and her eyes started to moisten, and she didn't start speaking. There was a lot of quiet. We all just sat there present in the unvoiced pain. And then she just looked up with gratitude toward him and slowly smiled. Her eyes were fixed appreciatively, gratefully on him. But there was still silence as we relaxed into the shift of feeling. And we sat there sensing like grace in that moment. And another one in the group gestured a blessing by lighting a candle. And then after some more silence, she lifted her head up with a big smile. And someone there in the circle said, amen. This is the precious quality of presence we can cultivate in our relating. It takes feelings of reverence, devoting ourselves to the subtleties within our bodies and in our hearts. Dear ones, we need to hold the space for the subtleties of deep feeling to have a voice. I want to say nothing is more important. Our hearts long for the pregnant silence of caring companions who can and will hear us into speech. What does your heart ache to say? Treasure that. It harbors a momentum, and that momentum longs to come out. Companion your heart. Companion each other. Amen.